You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Redeployment, Phil Klei has written first-person narratives of soldiers on the front lines of the war in Iraq and of those who've returned home to face the war's lasting effects. Mr. Klei served in the U.S. Marine Corps in Iraq during the surge of 2007. This is his first collection of short stories published by the Penguin Press. The New York Times called it gritty, unsparing, and fiercely observed, and I'm very pleased it has brought Phil Klei to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having me.
When and why did you join the Marines? As I understand it, it was around the time when all the reasons for going into Iraq had been put into doubt.
Well, I started the process in 2003, right? So, you know, during the before the invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, went to Officer Candidate School in 2004, was commissioned in 2005. I think that, you know, whether or not we should have gone into Iraq, was a different question than...
Well, this isn't a political conversation.
Right. So. No, but for me, it was a different question from, you know, can I go and do something positive, right? I think there's a tendency sometimes to think that if you join the military, you underwrote every policy that the Bush administration did or that, you know, the Obama administration is currently doing. That's not true. I have a friend who both protested the Iraq war and joined the military. I think that, I knew it was a really important historic occasion. I want to put myself in a position where I might be able to affect something.
And you were there a little over a year, January 2007 to February 2008.
Yes.
Where were you stationed? What was your job?
I was in Anbar Province. I was a public affairs officer.
So what does a public affairs officer do? Is that what I would think it would entail here, public affairs?
Right. You work with the media. You advise a general. I also had a group of really great Marines who worked for me, combat correspondents. If you've ever seen the movie Full Metal Jacket, the main character, Joker, is a combat correspondent. And they went out with all sorts of different units, wrote stories about them, took photos, took video.
You write about the propaganda that was used to encourage Iraqis to cooperate with the U.S. military. Was that part of your job as well?
So I was not a psychological operations specialist. It's a different job. It's not wholly unrelated, but you know that's very specifically using information as a tool on the battlefield.
And it's called PSYOPs, is it?
Yes. Yeah. And they.
What kinds of messages were they effective?
I mean, it depends, right? So, it could be everything from, you know, going out to in a Humvee with the grunts, giving out a phone number for people to call if they have information about, you know, somebody who's planting bombs or what have you, or you know, in the example that I use in one of the stories, they're trying to provoke insurgents into taking actions that'll get them killed.
Now, all of these are first-person narratives, but from very different kinds of people.
Yes.
So the usual question, how much of this is autobiographical, doesn't apply?
No, I didn't want to write about my own experiences. I wanted to really, you know, try and break apart a lot of the complicated things that either the people that I had known had gone through or just sort of to be able to ask myself the sorts of questions about what this experience could mean in a variety of different ways. In order to do that, I had to get outside myself.
So your narrators include active soldiers, administrative personnel, veterans, even a chaplain, thereby giving us a wide range of perspectives.
A wide range of perspectives, a wide range of jobs, and also, you know, a wide range of interpretations about what that experience meant.
And some of them experience violence firsthand, but not all of them. And some of them, you're also writing about their experiences after the war.
Right. I think that, especially for these wars, one of the really jarring things is coming back home to a country that's so removed from any sense that we're at war. Especially, you know, if you get out of the military and then you have friends who are going over on their fifth, their sixth, their seventh deployment, and you're, you know, living in New York in a very comfortable life where if you don't want to, you don't have to even think about the fact that we're sending people overseas.
You also deal with some of the ironies. For example, one narrator is a lance corporal who takes responsibility for shooting an armed 14-year-old boy to protect a younger soldier who is kind of an innocent. He's still playing Pokemon. And he does it to take the burden off of the younger soldier, and yeah, he winds up being congratulated for it.
Right. I mean,
he's feeling guilty, and he's being lauded for a heroic act.
Well, you know, his friend has done something that he feels complicated about. You know, you're a young guy. You grow up. You join the military. You want to maybe get into combat or experience what it's like, and then he ends up, you know, shooting somebody in an occasion where, you know, the use of force is justified, but still it's not maybe the good feeling that he thought of, you know, just killing a bad guy. It's much more complicated than that, and he's not ready to talk about it with other people, and so he asks his friends to say that he's the one who did it, because, you know, then he can soak up all the sort of, you know, macho congratulation that goes on.
I read that you gave your drafts to veterans and non-veteran friends to read through. What kind of feedback did you get? Was it different from the veterans and the non-veterans?
Very, very different. I mean, it was different person to person, right? I think that, you know, it was tremendously valuable having, you know, veterans read the work. I mean, you know, you get factual details, but you also get, you know, people who are really deeply engaged with the same kinds of questions that I were. But then, you know, you'll have, civilians who come at it from a very different angle, and it's just as important to get that perspective to understand. You know, I remember sending an early draft to a friend, and she said, okay, well, but, you know, what about this character's wife? Like, she doesn't even exist in this draft, and yet that's an incredibly important part of this story.
Well, in an op-ed piece that you wrote for the New York Times, you say that when people say, I could never imagine what you've been through, that's not appreciated. You even quote one former soldier saying, it makes me angry. Why? Aren't these stories intended to kind of capture the experience of what soldiers went through?
Right. And I think it's important for us to do the work of trying to imagine these other experiences, you know, the experience of the veterans that we're sending overseas. I think also the experience of the people in the countries that we send our soldiers to. And I think that, you know, this kind of we can bridge the distance between you know, civilians and military. We just have to make a serious effort to do so.
But why does it bother you, or soldiers in general, when people say, I can never imagine what you've gone through? You say in some cases they've gone through worse things than the soldiers.
Right. And I think it cuts off the possibility of empathy and real communication. It cuts off the possibility of something being able to be felt known by another human being.
You wrote that not trading in unexamined cliches turns out to be devilishly hard, because we have
right.
These cliches about what life is like in the military, what it's like to face combat.
What war is, I mean, you know, war is so many things. You know, it's where you become a man. It's you know, where you become a monster, where you become a traumatized shell. It's an arena for heroism. It's an arena for atrocity. There's so many cultural tropes and myths. I mean, it's like falling in love, right?
On the other hand, you can't avoid some of the things like PTSD.
Right. And I think that those – we understand, you know, the experiences we've been through those narratives that we have in our culture. And then, you know, we need to try and use those to make sense of what happened to us.
In the title story, Redeployment, a veteran is walking down a safe street in his hometown and his alertness is at level orange. How does that describe – how do you describe that to a civilian reader? And what is level orange? Is that the same level that cops go through when they're going to the movie, and yet they always seem to be aware of what's happening all around them?
I suppose it depends on, you know, on the cop and where they are. But it's basically the hyper-aware, hyper-alert state that is a survival skill. For him, the narrative of that story was in the Second Battle of Fallujah. And so, you know, it wasn't just that he needed to be hyper-aware to protect his own life, but that, you know, a military unit's a unit. Everybody's is interdependent. And he's, you know, for his entire deployment, is acutely conscious of, you know, lapses on his part could get his friends killed. And then, you know, he comes back, and the same sorts of hyper-alert skills that he had to develop while he was overseas, they're no longer helpful in civilian life.
The story about the chaplain has him reflecting on soldiers' reaction to death. He says that they look for rationality, as if mortality is a game with rules where the universe is rational and the God watching over maneuvers us like chess players, chess pieces, his fingers deep into the sides of the world. Is it difficult for him to balance his military responsibility with his own sense of morality?
I mean, that's part of the central conflict of that story. How do you spiritually minister to men in incredibly trying circumstance? They're in a very violent city, and they don't have good leadership in that unit, and their leadership is pushing them into an extremely aggressive posture. And so he's trying to deal with the kind of moral questions that these guys are facing, while the situation is continuing to get worse.
And then in the story, Money as a Weapon System, you write that success is a matter of perspective when it comes to war. How do you view the success of a war in Iraq?
I think, you know, recently he had al-Qaeda back in Ramadi and Fallujah. I think that there's a lot of violence going on in Iraq right now, and I think that was a real blow to, I think, a lot of veterans when we saw that. The human toll for people over there right now is just unimaginable.
Well, the narrator of the story is a Foreign Service officer, and he's working to create so-called lines of empowerment. He has large goals. When he arrives, he's told to have small goals.
Right. He has very grand plans for getting like a water treatment plant back on track. And, you know, there's just this sort of long history of, policy decisions that had been made very early on in the war the local politics of the region that make that goal much, much more complicated than he ever imagined. One of the people that he works with is this very cynical employee who just kind of, he just wants to check the box, right? And continue to kind of move along without actually having any real effect.
So he encourages them to get involved with the teaching beekeeping to some women. But yeah. there's a scene that, a part of that story that really struck me, where he has to respond to a congressman who has a friend, a supporter,
right,
who thinks baseball might save Iraq.
Yeah, his idea is that Iraqi culture needs, you know, the institutions that show children the right values that you would need for a good American society to prosper in Iraq, and he thinks that, you know, baseball is going to solve that problem.
Were you aware of that? That there was a sense that Americans have feel that they know what's right, and they were kind of frustrated with the Iraqis for having a different view of the world.
It depended on who you're talking to. I think that, you know, for a lot of the people who were working over there, they were very, especially at the lower levels and in the battalion level, you've got folks who are deeply, deeply concerned with what's going on in the local towns. I mean, you know, counterinsurgency is all about working with the local population. I think that, I think that frequently and certainly in the early stages of the war, there was much more of a disconnect between, you know, any real consideration of the specifics of the situation on the ground in Iraq.
This book has gotten fabulous reviews. Everybody has been very moved by it. Are you going to continue to write about military experience, or is the next? Are you writing stories that have nothing to do with that?
I'm working on something right now. I'll let you know. Uh-huh. it's still you know.
Well, Phil Klay, Klay. Mm-hmm. The collection of short stories is called Redeployment, named after one of the stories. It is published by the Penguin Press. Thank you so much for being with us, and congratulations on the fabulous response.
Thank you so
much. Deserved response.
Thank you.